Hello, and welcome to Soul-Led Living, a podcast dedicated to helping you live your soul's true path so you can create the dream life you know you are meant to live. I'm Nikki Novo, your spiritual mentor, a fiery Latina, mom of three, and an advocate for living soul-led. You're here because you're meant to be here. So let's do this. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Soul-Led Living. We are here with another guest. Other than Benny, Sean, you are like it. So welcome to the show. Thank you for being here and being like my first official guest outside of Benny.
I'm honored. Thank you. Also, to follow Benny is big shoes to fill, but excited to be here.
Literally. Sean is an intuitive human design guide and spiritual teacher with a focus on finding your ideal career and soul's purpose. Because there are so many career questions, like I had to bring Sean on to talk about like what is happening. I love the way she sees these career shifts, and it's really what she does all her days. So I'm excited to have her talk about it. Sean also lives on the island of Kauai in Hawaii, spent most of her 20s living in Latin America and trying many different jobs before she found human design and intuition work. So she is the perfect person to have these conversations with. I just love, and Sean's also a personal friend of mine and has studied under me as well. So I just wanted to be on the show together. So I'm excited to have you, Sean. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So Sean, any idea why we are caring so much about our career and purpose lately? I do feel like obviously it's been a conversation for a few years, all that. I think it's been a conversation since millennials came on the scene and started working. Now more than ever, people that I would have never thought wanted to leave like their corporate jobs or whatever are really having these conversations and feeling just so unfit. I actually been running a survey because I'm doing some research for my business, and I'm specifically looking for like the right words for things. And one of the questions I had in the survey was, which part of your life feels like the most inauthentic to you? And the highest rate was like my work and my career. Why do you think that's happening?
I think it's a really good question. I think it's like a couple of things. I do think it's people like waking up to their souls and realizing that there are like lots of different ways to kind of like more authentically make money. And I think the internet has really also created a lot of different examples. If even think about 10 years ago, people weren't necessarily like making money in the unique ways that they are now. So I think it's like, wow, I see people doing it differently. And then that stirs something in me to be like, oh, maybe this doesn't feel like right over here. And I really believe that, you know, I'm super passionate about like the new paradigm and like heaven on earth and like all these good things. And I think that when people wake up to their souls, they are seeing that like their work can be so much more than just like this one thing, but the soul might maybe wait to come online and express that. So it's like the right moment where that person feels ready to make a shift. I do think it's technology, and it's also just people waking up to their souls. As you know, in your work, people are waking up so quickly, you know, that they're like, oh, what used to work doesn't anymore. So yeah, I think like those are the main factors why people are like, this career doesn't fit. And I'm willing to admit that because I see people who are doing careers that fulfill that, you know?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So social media, we both have our issues. We all do. But think about how much we can see other people now versus in the past. Maybe we would have just assumed no one was happy at work, you know? Or even LinkedIn, you know, we have these platforms. So I think it's, yeah, just does that make sense? It's like those two things together.
Yeah. No, that's so accurate. I also have, I don't have a fully formulated prediction yet, but I have this feeling that right now the human, when you think about the human working like in a corporate environment, the human is almost like a like function of a machine that's on the assembly line. Like the human working in a corporate environment is almost like the arm of the machine that like makes the whatever product. And I think some people are waking up to being like, hey, you know what? I don't think I want to be the arm of that machine in that assembly line. I think I want to be like the person who is like maybe running the assembly line rather than like actually being like a part of the function of it, because that arm that's on the assembly line like never really gets a break, you know? And like, I'm just like always just like, you know, working. And I feel like that's kind of coming because I know a lot of people are afraid of AI and kind of the jobs it's going to take away from people or whatever. But I actually think that AI is going to give us in many ways like the opportunity to put in the AI as like the arm in the assembly line and allow us to be a little bit more like overseeing the assembly line and not having to be part of it. So I know we're scared of that, but I do think it's this kind of feeling of like where the world is going and realizing that if I don't have to be part of the machine, I can just kind of oversee the machine. Like, why not do that? So I think there's a little bit of shift in there. I don't think we have it like fully formulated, but that's kind of the feeling that I have as well.
Yeah. And I think I had mentioned to you right when I was piloting like my new session, I did a reading for someone and it came up this like concept of the creative economy. So anyone who's like a big spirit nerd, you can look up like a lot of star seeds apparently talk about the birth of the creative economy. I think they say in like the 30s range, but I totally agree with you. I think that no one feels like actually fulfilled doing a job that a robot could do. I think you feel fulfilled making money, providing for your family. Like, I think that's especially when like the Industrial Revolution kind of left the US, it left a lot of men without work. Like, because people derive so much of their value from their like output, especially from when we were working the assembly line, you know? But I do believe that no one feels like fulfilled in their soul from doing a job that like they know a robot could do, you know? So I totally agree that the introduction of AI is actually going to allow humans to be even more creative and actually awaken in them their true purpose, you know? So I completely agree. I think it's scary because of the lens in which it's spoken about, but if, you know, we transition in a way that like takes care of people and find ways to support people as the economy transitions, going to be huge. People are going to have the space to do what they love, as cheesy as that sounds.
I agree. And like, I think, you know, one thing I've always done in my business and have my, I always say this to like my teammates, I'll always be like, hey guys, I want you to pretend that you have to eliminate your job. And they're just like, why would you say that to me, Nikki? Like almost like if I was like about to fire them or something. I'm like, no, like, I do not want you doing anything.
She's on ChatGPT.
I do not want you to be doing anything that a software or whatever, because like I really want to like eliminate all those things, give it to the machines, to the softwares, to whatever, so that we could really strip down to what you truly are made for. And I think it takes time because like at first we're doing all the things that are necessary, right? It's like I'm sending out this label or I'm writing this thing or whatever, and like those are necessary, but doesn't give me any time to like actually find out what my true genius or what my true gifts are. That's one way to look at it. What is the creative economy? Like, what is kind of talk of the creative economy? What do you think it is?
So I just found it in meditation for a reading. And I was kind of like, but it's basically was doing a session for a client who is really high up in like a marketing agency and wants to shift into entrepreneurship. And he basically has a lot of, as we all do, is, you know, creative people putting creative work out into the world is scary and vulnerable. And, you know, a lot of people have written about this. I just basically saw in his session that like he was kind of meant to be someone that ushers in this creative economy that talks about an economy that's based off of our innate geniuses, but knowing that with that, it's like a little bit messier, right? That's why robots can't do it. Creative work, like think about the things that going off of what we can't outsource. We can't outsource a session to a robot. But it's messy sometimes. Like I get in there and I'm like in my meditation and I'm like trying to put the pieces together, you know? So I think the creative economy is going to be based off of, you know, our souls and their genius. But with that comes the interpersonal struggles that are a part of creation. I do think it's going to be an economy based off of our truth. And I do think we're going to see an exponential growth in lots of different ways. Like even think about what people create when they have the space, like their roots taken care of. They get to just create. That's going to, lead us to a lot of innovation, like true innovation.
Yeah. Like if you felt completely safe, what would you create? I mean, you might like chill for a couple years because you're so burnt out.
I get a little
but
lazy.
After that. Yeah. No, but honestly, you probably, I mean, yes, I think there's that, like there's a whole like a Wall-E kind of situation, that movie Wall-E, that like we could go that way where like you don't move. But it's funny, my husband for about 4 years hasn't been working because he's been healing and our family decided to kind of, you know, as a whole to give him space to heal. And he definitely took the time for like the first couple of years. But it's so funny, like he basically what it started to do was started to create. Sometimes in the beginning of the process, I just thought that I felt like a kindergarten mom, that like my kindergartner every day was bringing me like a new like art project. And then I was supposed to like put it up in my house too. That was the other thing. Like Benny would bring me things that were like half baked because they weren't good yet, because he was just like creating shit. And I was like, oh, what am I supposed to do with this crooked wooden star that you made for me with your new wood lay? So it was funny to see somebody who like,
it's the most beautiful star I've ever seen.
I was like, what does one do with this thing? It was just really interesting. Like he ended up going, he's always been a very creative person, but he ended up going like deeper into his creativity. And what came out of the time off is he birthed this new business, which he's working on, that is truly him. And it is actually truly using his gifts. It's just a little bit of a slower project. And because he's not afraid of his survival, because that has been like established, he's creating this like really beautiful thing. So that's kind of the idea. Like that's the idea that like perhaps there's a way that we are, you know, taking care of that survival first, and then we can move. If you think about what a robot doesn't have that we have, is the soul. Is basically, have you ever seen somebody pass away? Like if you saw your grandmother pass away or whatever, like what was the difference between the minute before that she was alive and the minute when she passed, right? Like the body was still there. So that's kind of like the robot, but the actual soul of hers was gone. And that is, I think when people are asking for like purpose and, you know, what am I supposed to do? Or like, they know that their purpose has something to do with their career. They're trying to tap into the soul part of themselves. That is something that, you know, a robot cannot replace. Speaking of your reading, Sean, Sean is the real deal, you guys. Like, obviously, I've had a lot of readings. I've trained a lot of people, and it's not like I want to necessarily, like, you love your children all the same, you know, so it's hard to kind of pick. But I would say that because she goes directly for your career and for your path, and she uses like a mix of things. It's really cool for me to see like a little bit of like soul reading method mixed in with some human design and some other stuff. But what's funny about her is I don't know like a ton about human design. I feel like everything I do know about human design is through Sean. It's like you mix that intuition part with human design. So it's like you're not really reading a chart. It's like you're getting these downloads like based off the chart. And it was so crazy spot on, and also very comforting, I think, at the end of the day too, because you're just like, oh, like this is who I am. So I just wanted to give you that shout out. I really enjoyed your reading.
Thank you. Yeah. And I do like, I love that about human design. I think it's what opened my channel to like intuitive work. And I think it's just so potent and helpful to be like, oh yeah, this is like my makeup, you know? And then I think we both have a very, like, even our relationship with intuition, intuitive readings is great too, because it's not necessarily like we can know every single thing. But I think what's powerful about like reading that makes us feel like seen, it kind of helps us be like, oh, my soul knows what it's doing. It's going to be okay. I'm on the right track. Human design, I think it's just can be so, so validating and informative and very potent system.
And Sean, the work that you're doing today is actually, you kind of have a similar story to me where you kind of stumbled into this work. You didn't mean to do this work. Some of my favorite stories of yours that like make me crack up so much are all the jobs you were doing before you got here.
I know. Please, it's funny because
you grew up in California in Orange County?
Yeah. So I grew up in Orange County. Yeah. Actually, it's funny because maybe I told you this. I found you because a couple of years ago, I had 3 human design clients all in 1 week mention you. And I was like, who is this?
Stop it.
What they speak of. And no. And I was like, wait, that's crazy. That's so interesting. And then I looked you up, and then I heard you on a podcast where you were like, yeah, I didn't grow up seeing whatever spirits. And I was like, okay, cool. Because that's right when I was kind of like waking up to like being intuitive. I was doing like a certification to become clairvoyant because I'm very visual. But no, I mean, I grew up in Orange County. My family is like not religious. Like my dad's family, he grew up very religious, like going to Catholic school. And I think both my parents were kind of like swaying the opposite way. So super secular home, like, you know, typical like California upbringing. Never was interested in metaphysical, like anything. So yeah, it's all been quite a random journey.
But you're kind of funny because like you went to UCLA, and then like you were like I just could just picture you as like a little like pain in the ass activist, like as a kid, you know, just like you were like, I am
100%.
Going, but you knew.
That was me too.
But you knew, like you knew you had something to offer. So tell me a little bit about like kind of what you thought you had to offer and like how that's changed and how do you make sense of all that?
interesting, even your comment about like, what do we create when we're secure? And I grew up in a home that was really secure in every way, like financially very secure. I didn't realize like how lucky this was, but even I like got a job in high school at Urban Outfitters so I could be cool. And then my dad was like very like sincere that he was like, when you go to college, I just want you to focus on school. You've been working really hard. I really don't want you to even have a job, which is such a luxury. So my root was secure. And I think my relationship with my soul was really ignited by like nature. I love the environment. Like I love the ocean. And I was just really passionate about the earth. So I think that was the first passion. I'm passionate still about like taking good care of the earth and like evolving with the earth. And so that was really like the main thing. And that's what made me such an activist is I was like, well, I just really want to take care of the earth. So I totally was like, I think I joked with you that if there was like meat served at something, I was like, well, I'm just not going. And I was like this super vegan, like, you know, kind of crazy in a way that I was like, okay, I can tone it down. But I think it was just to this day, I'm happy that I had my soul had the opportunity to just kind of be like, wow, to find what I love. My work has changed. And I think that's why I still feel like my purpose is to help the world and take care of the earth. But the iteration of that in the form of a career is different than I thought. And I think that's why the relationship with career and purpose is so interesting, you know? But yeah, I was just like, loved the earth. And so that's what I ran with and became that person in college that was a little extreme, but like the intent was there, you know, I had a good heart. I just was like a little intense in my execution of the passion.
As an entitled Californian would do. But Sean, but then you did a bunch of jobs, which is really funny. Like after college, what happened?
It's funny too, going off of like California and entitled is I moved to Latin America, right? And when I lived in Colombia, they don't even know what a vegetarian is. People don't if there's food, you eat it, right? So it's like, was so humbling and good for me to just like see kind of different ways of living. But so right after college is when I was like, I still think I want to get my PhD. I had a really cool experience like writing a thesis my senior year. And I was like, oh, this could be like a path for me. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to get this research job. And that's what I did pretty much right after UCLA. And it was really cool because I had studied abroad in Panama. That's what kind of ignited this like really surprising like love. I don't know if I've been Latin in a lot of past lives, but I just like loved the Spanish language. I loved being in Panama. So I moved there after graduation, got a job like pretty randomly. Like I wrote to a bunch of people in my like very intense way and like landed this research role that I was like probably underqualified for. But it was really illuminating because that's when I realized like, I think it was my soul showing me that what we see on paper is not necessarily like the day-to-day of something, you know, or what we think something's going to be, which is weird with career. That's why people are like, I need internships and things like that, because you could glorify anything. And then you get into the weeds of it and you're like, whoa, this actually isn't, my soul is not in this. So that was kind of my first like initial disappointment because I was like,
that's kind of like when
I'm out in the rainforest, I'm catching frogs.
Yeah, that's like when you think you're going to work for a nonprofit that does really good things. And then you get there and you're like, oh, wow. First of all, there's a bunch of bureaucracy. And this is all like just for the people that like claim that they're part of this, you know, and there's that disappointment. Yeah, it's just not like not what you thought. And some people stick around and I think get really jaded at some point.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that my soul really saved me from that because I did do actually, the nonprofit was my last kind of like, I don't want to say like I worked at a nonprofit in Panama like a couple of years later. I like did research and then I taught English and then I was like, okay, I just was kind of like my soul was really exploring. And then, yeah, I worked at a nonprofit and I was like, wow, it's just interesting that you can get jaded really, really quickly. And I also think, yeah, everything that we do is about the love and the consciousness with which we do it. And I sadly think in a lot of like big bureaucracies, like people have lost their passion, their soul. And so that affects the work, you know, and that really became clear to me.
Yeah. I had a short run after I left the film industry. I was like, I just want, like, all I understood, my soul was calling me to like help the world. Like I realized that like working in LA, and for me personally, I don't think that's for everybody, but like working in publicity in LA, in the film industry, I just kind of felt like, who am I helping? You know, like, what am I doing? So I had this call, and I think that's usually how the soul talks. It's just like a little breadcrumb. It doesn't give you all the answers. It's not like, I was told, you're going to be a spiritual mentor and you're going to do all these readings and this is how you're going to help the world or whatever. I just heard like, you're supposed to help people. So my little human brain was like, okay, I guess I'm going to work at a nonprofit, which lasted about like a solid 2 weeks in Miami. And after like, that's one thing. I have such a low tolerance for lifestyle pain. Like almost like if this is not fitting like my lifestyle or my soul, I'm out really quickly.
We have that in common.
Which keeps you out of trouble, but also sometimes doesn't let you stay as long as maybe you should. But I did remember being like, this is horrible. And actually, I jumped into media because I kind of saw, I think, the power of media. I was like, wow, like, I'm going to write this thing and like all these people in the city are going to read it. Like, I could spread a message. And it didn't really make sense. It was just fun for me. But ultimately, media has been such an important part of my process because it is what has allowed me to understand how to spread a message. Like if I did not know media at the time, like my media, like which was after leaving LA, I went to Miami and I started working as an editor. I mean, it was a bunch of like hedonism, you know, it was just, I would write about bikini shops and clubs and I would go to all the hot parties in town and it was so much fun. I was doing nothing for the world other than telling them like where they can get the best fruity drinks. I mean, it was fantastic. And then of course I had like my strong awakening, which led me to ultimately like do the self-help work and then the spiritual work. You had your own awakening.
Yeah.
And kind of what was that switch from? Was it kind of like, none of this is working out for me? Like I need answers? Or what kind of pushed you over the edge to not continue to pursue that?
Yeah, I would say, and it's just to comment on what you said about like, you know, the pull of your soul being like, okay, I want to like help the world. But I think what's interesting is yesterday we were talking about like the simplicity of intuition. I think for both of us, it's like, this feels good until it doesn't. And then when it doesn't, I go, right? And I think like you said, our tolerance for what doesn't feel good is just low, right? So we're like, well, bye, you know? It's just interesting that, yeah, like you followed those breadcrumbs, which you needed to, and then you felt your soul be like, okay, well, now I need to go help, you know, and you believed that you could. So I just think that's really beautiful because I always definitely felt that like, deep in my heart, even when, you know, people were like, you know, don't try to help the world, help yourself. And I just was like, I just do not believe that. You know what I mean? I'm like, I just don't believe that. And my biggest awakening, like, I ponder that a lot. Cause I remember even at one point, like my senior year of college, like when I was really worried about career, like so many of my friends were like, I don't really think about like, I just know that I'm like good at this and I can make money doing this. And like, why would I think about anything else? And like, I just remember I was going to go home for the weekend because I'm from Orange County. And I like got in the car with my mom and I just cried. And I was like, no one cares about anything. I was like, am I the only one who cares? And it was like really painful for me. I was like, I don't understand why like people don't care. So I think it's true for people who are, waking up to their souls, for people who are going to listen to this podcast, I really think that's true. But it's tricky because like, you know, the soul, like, I don't know if someone's like a baby soul, like maybe they're just here to like learn different stuff. But I do think because like the earth is in such like a pivotal moment, there are more people that are learning how much they like really want to help people. I'm like, does that come if everybody like raises their consciousness, for example, right? Is everybody then naturally going to be like, oh yeah, I want to do good for others. I want to know that, like, but I'm not quite sure, you know, because maybe some people, they won't have the space to explore, raise, like, and grow in that way. But I do think most people, it's like an intrinsic need to like want to help people and like do good, but I don't think it's every soul's path to be like, that needs to be like the priority and the function of my work.
I think we also have to redefine helping because I think we think about helping as like very black and white. Like I must be doing something that supports another person by, you know, coaching them, healing them, you know, putting a Band-Aid on them, whatever. Where I often think that my older brother is a really good, great example. And I've shared him before, guys. And if you've read my book, you've heard this before, but my older brother is an anesthesiologist, knew he was going to be a doctor at 2 years old. My father's a physician and medicine is kind of, it's an interesting career path. Like it's so passed down. Like most children of doctors like become doctors as well, which is the truth, except for this little black sheep of me. And yeah, sure. Like he likes the job. It's a very good fit for his energy, the way his energy moves, working in a hospital, being on his feet. He's very social, being able to see a lot of people, the movement, all that in the hospital is such a perfect fit to who he is. And of course, I mean, he's a doctor, so he's with people. And of course, but does he believe that he's like meant for that? He believes more, he understood that like this was a good fit for me. It's going to provide for the lifestyle that I want. And my brother's lifestyle is actually the most inspiring thing about him. I think that if he wasn't who he is, I honestly wouldn't be who I am. Like when I was getting ready to leave Miami, the only reason I even thought that was like possible was because my older brother always lived that way. He never cared what most people were doing. Like he always followed his heart and his heart always led him to the water because he's a big surfer, big water sports guy, big adventure guy. And he's like, Miami's flat. There's no waves. It's busy. Not interested. He has always been almost kind of selfish, it looks like sometimes, but it is been so inspiring. Anybody who watches him is like inspired by the way he balances his life. And what's always funny is that Rob always, I always say like he always has little followers. Like he always has, he is like a 43-year-old man and he always has like people in his backyard because he lives on the water ready to serve like all these dudes. I'm like, where do these dudes come from? There's always different dudes here. And he's like, and he's like converted people from the hospital who like never, you know, he does, he's a really big foiler now, which is like kind of almost like a surfboard with like a motor. And he's like converted people into like foilers, like people that never really had like friends or were athletic. Like my brother just kind of like brings them on. And to me, that's his purpose. Like it really work supports his purpose. And really like he's just like almost like an expander in many ways. And he's just a beautiful person all around. But that always helped me understand that sometimes work supports your lifestyle. And then that lifestyle, you live it really well. So it could be like, I have this job, you know, it feels like meaningful and it feels like it works with my energy. And I'm also able to like really be involved in my kid's school. And I've been like moving the school ahead by bringing these different programs in and blah, blah, blah. So I think an expansion of like maybe the word help and knowing that, like, I think our purpose is really to just to live true to us. And sometimes like perhaps like the money that you make at work supports the way you live. But I would say with that, I do think we're all having a problem with the amount of hours that any job is asking and the internal eternal sunshine of it. Like even my brother, I mean, there's such a burnt outness in there. I think it's because the systems are so masculine that that is something no matter what, even if like the job's like, yeah, this is a good fit for me. It's the no breaks that I think is getting really hard.
Totally. Yeah. And I think you made a really important point when you said that still like that work still feels like true to your brother. I think I have a lot more like appreciation like for the word true, because I think that's the word that when your soul is like, this does not work anymore, it's like, that's not true for me. But someone like your brother is like, okay, this work feels true. And then we're always going to be so much more than what we do, right? Like we're so much more than what we call our jobs. And I think what's really beautiful is like, yeah, your brother's like being his soul self all the time when he's like, yeah, let's go surf. And like, you know, he's just like, he's being in his truth. And that's like really amazing. But I completely agree. I think that what's tricky right now with career is that so many systems are really built in ways that are incompatible with humanity, right? And even with human design, we have generators and manifesting generators that you and I are both generators. We have this like beautiful battery of energy that's a bit more rechargeable than other types. But we think like 50% of the planet of the US has like adrenal fatigue. Like no one's built to work in the way that we are now. And so that, of course, that's hard, you know, and I think that's why the changing of systems is going to be a big like literal game changer, right? There are even people who are teachers and they're maybe their souls are like incredible teachers, but the function or like the way that education works is like so messed up that they'll leave and they'll do something else. And it's like, that makes sense because we have to also accept that a lot of systems are where they are and they're built masculine. They don't take like the best, the well, there's no wellness for like the employees and the people who are doing the work. And of course that's going to cause issues, you know, and cause problems.
Yeah. I mean, I think about the way I work right now. I mean, this is going to sound crazy to some of you, but on my calendar, which I like live and die by my Google calendar, it's like where all my appointments are, you know, the conversation, it even tells me like, you're going to write a podcast episode. Like I put everything in my calendar. And I actually have on my calendar the day of my period, like when I'm getting to get my period, because I know that the week leading up to my period is probably not the best day. It's probably not the best week to, like, let's say, make Instagram content, because I'm feeling like I need to go into my shell. I mean, if you are, you know, super into watching my Instagram every day, you'll notice, oh, Nikki like comes in hot for like 14 days straight. And then we just see her kind of wither, and then she'll come out again. And that is just like, because that's my rhythm. And even as a generator, and that is my rhythm. And I'm able to build my business that way. Even things like, you know, I know that in the morning I have a lot of creative energy. So I leave the morning open for creative work or writing, that kind of stuff. And then in the afternoon, I know that I'm good with like my clients and readings and meetings and stuff like that. It's just a different energy. And I'm almost like able to like sit in my chair to be able to do those in the afternoon, which in the mornings, like I'm almost not. And I'm just really grateful that I can set my schedule. But then I think about my other friends who work in corporate, that they're like, oh no, like we have meetings all day. You know, I never get anything done or whatever. And they can't really decide when those meetings are going to happen, because usually there's, you know, maybe 10 other people in the meeting and you have to kind of work around that, and everybody's different. So those systems are really hard. I don't think we have the answers for it. But Sean, so like with that, I think that is why in many ways entrepreneurship always feels like the solution to people that are kind of like, this corporate thing is not working. Because at the end of the day, you can make your own system in your own business. It's funny how sometimes we have our own businesses and like we make old systems within the business. So it's always something that we have to learn. You know, I always joke, like whenever I'm being like really hard on myself at work and giving myself like a crazy schedule that's unnecessary, I'll be like, yeah, my boss, she's such a bitch. Because it's like, who told me to like,
not this evil make boss. This? It's me.
It's me, you know? So, you know, you figure that out along the way. But my question to you, Sean, like with all the readings that you're reading so many people, their careers, their purposes, you're teaching it in group. Are we all meant to be entrepreneurs?
I think that's like such a good question, and definitely not. We are not all meant to be entrepreneurs. And I think what's really interesting is, I mean, a lot of people have like a bone to pick with the tech industry, which I get. And I worked in tech for a bit and it wasn't a fit. But I think what's kind of cool about that space is it's trying to like make work better for people, right? So even like, I think we're going to see corporations change because like they have to like keep top talent, right? If you work in the tech space, it's like a big term, but it's a real thing, right? But top talent usually are people who want more autonomy, because people who are talented and smart and confident, they don't want to be told what to do all the time, and they don't want to be like micromanaged. And so I think you have a small company, but like even with Kat, who is, you know, your assistant and now does so much, think about all the space you give her to do what's best for her, because you know what's best for Kat is what's best for you, right? So I think that corporations are going to move into that. They're going to start to see that they're like, okay, I used to say, I was like, don't do like productivity studies, just let people be happy. I'm like, let people, you know, like, for example, if like when I'm working for someone, they could be like, oh, you know, Sean's on it in the morning. So ideally, in the future, I can say to my boss, like, hey, unless it's essential, don't put me in meetings from 9 to 11. I'm doing this from 9 to 11. Like, I think right now we're seeing a lot of dysfunction in corporations because people don't feel like they can speak up for themselves. Like, it's a lot of like humanness that's making it be messy. But I think in the future, as that gets better, work environments will get healthier and happier. And I think entrepreneurship right now seems like the solution. But as we both know, entrepreneurship is really hard in a lot of ways that working for somebody else is not. And so I think to be an entrepreneur, like, I'll even read for souls that I can tell how much like they love teamwork and they love collaboration. That's usually not going to be the everyday for an entrepreneur, especially not at the start. So I think entrepreneurship, you need a certain, that soul needs to like not be a lone wolf. It'd be interesting to hear your perspective on yourself and how you like to work. But I think there needs to be a level of like, I like to work by myself. I'm willing to have a little bit of like uncertainty and risk, which some people at a soul level, they just do not like that. You know, like I think we can mindset shift all day long, and we have to, especially if you choose to be an entrepreneur. But I do read for souls where I'm like, that would not be like in your best interest to like choose the path of being an entrepreneur. So I think right now it seems like this like sexy solution, but that's also because not enough people like talk about how hard it is. It's like a different kind of hard. So definitely not. I think we're all meant for work that lets us advocate for ourselves and be creative and have a healthy life. But that doesn't need to be working for ourselves. And I do think that we're going to see companies and corporations and systems shift and change, because they're going to have to if they want people to continue to be loyal to them. Yeah, that's kind of how I see it.
I love that. And I think the best metaphor I have for a person that's maybe working for a company or, you know, like a longtime employee versus an entrepreneur, and I mean no shade by this metaphor, but I think it's an important metaphor to know. I, as an entrepreneur, am a lion. You, as an employee for somebody else, also a lion. We're both lions, right? I have been hunting for 10 years. I've been out every day going into the forest hunting. You, as an employer, have been still a lion, but you hang out on a deck with other lions, and there is like a certain amount of food that's fed to you, and you're like working on something while you're being fed. So when the person that wants to transition from being the employer to being the entrepreneur, I always ask, like, are you willing to hunt? Do you like to hunt? And hunting, a lot of the times you are hunting alone because you have to be quiet. If there's too many people hunting at the same time, you're going to scare away the animal. I don't know much, I've never been hunting, but this is just, I live in the forest. So this is like what I imagine.
Are you not out catching your food, Nikki?
No, definitely not. But I'm out like looking for, and I'm comfortable with that. And I'm confident in my ability to be like a huntress. So that is why, like, I actually am more afraid of having a ceiling of income than being a huntress. So, for example, I mean, I've worked for a lot of companies, and I worked in media, which is a low paying job. I always, as an editor, as a young editor, I always had like several freelance jobs at the same time to be able to cover. I'm sure, like, if I would continue, yes, like the more you move up, obviously the more you make money. But a lot of my girlfriends that were maybe in marketing or in, you know, maybe law or whatever, they were making more money than, or in hospital systems, things like that. They were making more money than I was in media, because media just is like a pink collar industry. And for the most part, you're just getting paid less. So I always had to like still find my own meat, you know, basically. And I hated the idea of anybody telling me how much money I was going to make, because I always thought, what if my refrigerator breaks this month and I need and you know, I could be the best budgeter in the world, and I get the whole like saving accounts and stuff like that for like whatever. But let's say like my kid wants to go to this, he's really smart, he wants to go to this private school next year. Like, how the hell do I prepare to be able to send him there, like if I'm at this job with a ceiling? So that is something, and I'm sure those of you who know how to work that system will like tell me, Nikki, obviously it's not that hard, this is how you do it. But it's just the way that my mind works. Like my dad, I think I learned this from my dad. He was always like, oh, you guys want to go on a ski vacation? Okay, cool. I don't currently have the money, but I'm going to find a way to make the money, and I'm going to do it by like taking this shift or doing this. So like he kind of like made the money appear, and that's kind of how I am as well. And I feel more comfortable with that than being limited by a salary. So I feel like the salary is scarier to me than the space to make what I want to make. And I think that's probably a personality trait. I come from many generations of entrepreneurs. My dad was a doctor, but still very much ran his own business. So I just think it might be like something that's like within me. I think it's part of being Cuban. Like Cubans were mainly, most Hispanics are entrepreneurs because we don't have huge corporations in our, you know, third world countries almost. So everybody kind of works, like figures out a way to make their own money. But I think there's still Yeah. So with that, I think that I'm just sharing that so that you're, if you're debating, you know, what to do, like that's, those are kind of the ways I can explain it. And I think it's a personality trait for sure. But I think there's still such an important place for the corporate environment and the big company. Like that's how we make like big things together. We need a lot of people to make those things. I guess it's just fighting for those changes.
And I would say too, like for you, it's definitely like in your blood, as you're saying, like come from a long line of entrepreneurs. And, you know, my family, we like immigrants, like they do know how to make something out of nothing, which is kind of entrepreneurship, right? Because they have to. I think that those are important questions to ask yourself. But I also would say like a lot of people, let's say you're in an industry that's not media, right? And you know that that money is there, right? Like let's say you are a lawyer or you do work in tech, right? And especially my first and only corporate job was in tech. That money is two promotions away, right? If you work in sales, it's one, you know, like you see people make their money really fast. And so that's an option in a lot of industries. But I'd say the bigger questions to ask yourself are, do I, A, like, am I interested in hunting? And am I willing to learn how to hunt? Because I think someone like myself, you know, I don't come from a line of entrepreneurs. I have definitely, do I think that given different circumstances, they would have become entrepreneurs? Probably. But I think I've had to ask myself, okay, I don't know anyone directly in my lineage who hunted, but am I willing to learn how to hunt? Is it more important for me to learn how to hunt so I can be in charge of my destiny? We're all in charge of our destiny, but I think if you choose to be an entrepreneur, you're a little bit more in charge of your destiny because like you said, Nikki, so eloquently, like I'm going out, like if I want X amount this month, like I'm going to go do that, right? So that's me like really taking charge of my life in a way that I think if you work for somebody else, you can't quite do that as much since there are so many industries available to us now and media specific. So, you know, potentially if you're from an industry where maybe you're already making that money, maybe you're already kind of in a position where you do have a very healthy salary, but your soul is calling you to something else. I would just kind of like pose those questions to yourself. What's scarier to me? Like you said, Nikki, is it having a cap on my salary or is it potentially like not knowing how I'm going to make my money in 5 years? Because I think that's kind of a question that is always going to be present to an extent in entrepreneurship. What do you think, Nikki? Because like you're such a seasoned business owner. But I think there's always a little bit of that uncertainty, you know?
Yeah, I think it's funny because, you know, like as a kid, there's so little worries, right? Like you're like, mom and dad got it. Like I'm not, you know, you're not like at school wondering, you know, for most children, especially American children, right? For the most part, you're not at school wondering about, you know, that there'll be food or something for the most part, if we're like that, like blessed. But then all of a sudden you become an adult and all this like stuff that you had no idea was being taken care of, like now it's on you, right? Like I remember the first time I had to pay private school for my kids, for one kid, for Allie, I called my dad and I was like, Dad, you paid for 3 private schools. Like how in the hell? Like I was so, you know, sheltered to this idea that my dad was like working to pay for these 3 private schools. Like, and he's like, see, Nicole.
What did he say to you?
He goes, see, Nicole, it's hard, Nicole. Yeah, like that's how, and he's like, see, yeah, you know, my dad was just always somebody that like he was, which I kind of complain about this with Benny, because Benny, when he works hard, he will let you guys know. Okay. Like he is going to grunt. He is going to like complain.
Benny's tired,
he's going to tell you his back hurts. Like, I was like, I had never met a guy like this because my dad was just one of those people that made things look easy and he just really didn't complain. And I guess just they don't make men like that anymore because, you know, he was an immigrant and all that kind of stuff. There was no time to complain. But Benny's privileged.
No men like that anymore, everybody.
Right? Where Benny's like, he will let you know how hard he works. So I really had no idea. But yeah, he told me that he just like told me it was hard. Like when so he kind of just helped me know that, yeah, what you're doing is hard. Yes, if you want to send your kids to private school, it's hard. And I don't know if I would have preferred him to tell me that when he was younger. I think I liked, because it is a little bit shocking when you get to that place, right? That it's hard. But I also think that if he would have told me and like kind of been a little depressing about it growing up, I wouldn't have had so many dreams and I would have not been like so out there and like kind of mm-hmm. optimistic, because I kind of thought that everything was possible in many ways, because my parents really made me feel that way. You know, they really made me feel like anything was possible. But then of course, when it gets hard, you're like, what is happening? You know, so
no one told me. What do you mean? Yeah.
And I think there's those moments in entrepreneurship too. You're just like, wait a second, that girl on Instagram that told me she made, you know, $20,000 in a month, like never told me, you know, all the hard things. Yeah. There's like that component. But I think the things to ask yourself is business interesting to you? Like, do you like to learn? Because entrepreneurship is really for a person that like constantly likes to learn. So that's like important. And also, you know, there's this talk about burnout, and we get burnout at our corporate jobs and all that kind of stuff. But even having my own job, there's been times that I've been burnt out. And, you know, I think people tell you like, oh, it's like you're not sleeping or you're not eating enough or you're scheduling yourself too much. But it's so funny that when you kind of really find, you know, sometimes it's in my business, I'm like, you know what, I'm not passionate about that anymore. Or I don't want to talk about it like that anymore. Or I want to do things this way. All of a sudden, I have like all the energy in the world. So I think that, mm-hmm. you know, are you driven by the things that excite you and change? Like, is that fun for you? Where like my best friend, like she's always like, oh, wow. Like I remember growing up as a kid, like she was so scared to change her bedroom because she was like, she just loves like things the way they are. And so she's a great long-term corporate worker because it's like very small change, where like for me, it's a constant pivot and a change as an entrepreneur. So those are kind of some things I think about. I get bored when things are the same. So it's really has to do with your personality. And yeah. I think also you want to not only look at your personality, but I want you to also look at the shadows of your personality. So I just had a client today that she was like, you know, I don't go deep into anything that I learn. And she was saying it like it was a bad thing. And I was like, well, it sounds like you're kind of a curator of sorts, or she's working on something. I'm like, I think you're going to make like the poo-poo platter version of this thing. Like you're going to make like the sampler version of this thing. You know, it's so easy to hate on the things that look like they're such a bad fit for our current settings, right? Like my older brother, if you put him to sit, as a software engineer at a computer all day, he would look like a horrible tech person, because that guy cannot sit down. He has a lot of energy in him. He's an Aries and a generator, and he needs to be moving across the hospital. But if he saw that as a bad thing, he actually wouldn't like find the right thing. So really like looking at both like the good and the bad, quote unquote bad, of your personality, and seeing if those like match like the personality of an entrepreneur at the end of the day. And I would also say that like mm-hmm. the reason I was long-winded about the kids situation, I just got off on a tangent, was I think it's funny that like people that work for companies, it's so funny how we put all this trust in the company. We're just like, yeah, I'm going to get a paycheck every 2 weeks. Like, of course I am. And I think that the joint manifestation and consciousness of all the employees being like, of course we're going to get a paycheck every Friday, actually like produces the company to produce that way. Because at some point in your own business, you actually get to that place as well. You start to be like, of course my business is going to produce, you know, $10,000 a month. And you're not worried about it anymore because you believe like in the system at some point. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that like my business can be just as secure or maybe even more secure than like a really big corporation's ability to pay their people. Like I could be the same way if I have the right systems in place. Of course, if my business like completely depends on me, I'm something that like, it, you know, is not a perfect system because I'm a person. But you never like think that your company is going to run out of money, but your company is like always scared of running out of money. Like for the most part, they're looking at those sheets and they're being like, we are in the red. You just, kids don't hear about that, right? Like my parents might be struggling to pay the mortgage, but it's not like they're telling the kids, you know? So I think that that's really interesting. If you really do want to be an entrepreneur and you're like, I don't know if I can like trust myself to make money, you can take that trust that you put in that big company into yourself. And I think that is really, that's the secret sauce. You know, how do I get to a place that I trust myself as much as I trust this hospital or this, you know, agency or whatever that pays me? You can create a business that is your sugar daddy in that way as well. And that's, I think, what we like look for. So you kind of have to ask yourself if you can do those things.
And do you feel like you felt that way when you went into business, Nikki, that you were like, I know I can get to that trust? Or how long did it take, do you think, to cultivate that trust? Or maybe you always had it.
You know, you definitely have to have this kind of feeling of like, I can figure it out. I can make money. Like I always knew how to, like, I always knew that I could make money, maybe not through my business or whatever, but I always just like knew, like, I know how to make money, whether that means I'll take a bartending job to be able to make my business work. Like that's the mindset, you know, I'll move to a smaller house in order to make my business work. So you kind of have to have like that type of personality. And then your business tells you when it's ready to trust itself. So I just think also you can't like necessarily put the pressure on it right away in the first year or so, but the like the second or third year, you can start to see what it is capable of. And there's a lot of like manifestation teachers that teach about like energetic minimums. So at some point it's like you just expect your business to produce $5,000 a month because it's been producing $5,000 a month for the, like you kind of get used to that. Like you almost like can't imagine it going below 5,000. So you're always working to up your minimum, you know, like, okay, now the same way, like I'm just saying, like, let's say Apple corporations, I don't know what their energetic minimum is, but they're probably like used to making, I don't know, this is probably completely wrong, but they're used to making $10 million a month, right? I can't imagine dropping down to 1 million. Like that's just like, woof. Like, so in a way, you know, the company keeps producing that way. So that's kind of, that's ultimately what you want. And that's where that kind of like space holding the manifestation process is when you're starting to be like, yeah, no, of course. I can't imagine. You have an energetic minimum right now, you know, like whatever that is. So we're trying to like move up to being like, yeah, no, I can't imagine my bank account going below this, or I can't imagine my business not making this amount. And then that just kind of keeps, and that's where that trust ends up building. It's really interesting how that happens.
Because even what's interesting about comparing a business of self, like your business, for example, to like Disney, for example, at a certain point, someone started Disney. And like, obviously, then that company takes on an energy of its own, right? And it becomes like its own entity and its own thing. But it is interesting because like, even think about tech companies, they're in the red for how much of their time. It's so normal to be like, oh, we're not profitable yet, but yet we're these like big companies, but you're still getting paid. So even you as the employee, you don't see that
they're having a hard time. Listen, you might in your gut know, I cannot trust myself for that because I'm not made for that. And I think that doesn't make you any less than. I don't trust myself as an employee, right? Like if all like bets were on me being an employee, I don't trust myself because I know that one day I would come home to my husband and be like, I just couldn't deal with that bitch anymore. And I quit.
I would definitely get fired.
Which is very unsafe for my family. So like it would be an unsafe choice for me to make for myself. So like I think that also if you're just like, no, like I don't trust myself, then I think that's valid as well, you know, like, or if you think you can work up to trusting yourself, that there is space to be like, no, I think I can believe in myself, then that would also be like a sign that like entrepreneurship is there. So Sean, anything that if I'm kind of like trying to look for my path, my purpose, career-wise, any ideas of kind of where to start?
I would say like the best thing to start at is like, what is it that I maybe like always imagined for myself? Or it's tricky because depending on like where you're currently at and like what your trajectory has been, like for me, that question is like, what do I really like doing now? What are the things I like doing that fascinate me? It's like a stirring in my soul, kind of the kind of things that I feel myself pulled towards. And if you have like absolutely nothing, I would say clear your plate and give yourself a lot of space. So I think sometimes people think that their like next career thing will like drop on their laps, and maybe like it'll be like you have a coworker say something to you one day, but oftentimes our intuition or our soul needs like some space, and it needs time to, I would say, almost like get you off of autopilot a little bit. Like if you're deeply kind of in the motions of the day to day, there's not a lot of space for the soul to get in there and be like, well, hey, like maybe go right here instead of left. Give yourself space, clear out physical space and time space. I say the soul really likes spontaneous, uninterrupted time. So even just deciding that Saturday from 3 to 7, I'm going to plan nothing. And then kind of just like see what it is that you want to do. You could plan time to like write in your journal. And I think the more you get to know yourself, it's easier to figure out like, what do I like? And then making those career pivots, you'll see where your soul is leading you to when it comes to career, whether it's like you stumble upon something or you get a download. But I think right now with I think that's why the pandemic was such a big shift for so many people, because they had space, right? Because they couldn't distract. And so sometimes when you kind of need to create the time for yourself, and then that I need to follow the breadcrumbs, but we need to create the spacing for the breadcrumbs, if that makes sense. So that's where I'd say where to start. And then also, let's say you like kind of know that you want to go into entrepreneurship, but you're like scared. Then that the step for you, I'd say, is like look for expanders, right? Look for people who have made the jump in a way that works for you. That's going to be a good place to start. So you can see like, okay, this is possible. I can do this. That's where I would say to start if you know a little bit more about what you want to do. Like I reached a phase where I was like, okay, I know I want to work for myself. I have no idea what that's going to look like. Like I stopped being able to bet on myself as an employee when like 6 months into my nonprofit work, they put me on like probation. And I was like, you barely pay me. I'm like, what are you going to do? Fire me? Like, fine. Like, whatever. You know? So that's where I was like, okay, I want to work for myself. And then my role was I need to see people who are doing interesting things, working for themselves, expanders who I can identify with. But if you're like, I have a corporate job. I don't like it. I don't want to be an entrepreneur. I just want something I like. Spend time with yourself. Interview people at your companies. I think that's really underrated. Even when I worked in tech for 9 months, I probably interviewed like 7 people. I just was like, hey, can we get a coffee? Because I was like, what do you do? Tell me about it. Like, I just was like, I want to figure out what to do and I don't know. And so that was that route I took when I worked in tech. So that if you work for a corporation, I recommend that. Just do informational interviews. People are always like super happy to talk about themselves. So yeah, I'm just trying to give a tailored answer because sometimes we're in such different phases of our career trajectory.
To also like, if you're in burnout, this is like not the best time. Cause I think sometimes a lot of times we start thinking about what's the right career and all that stuff when we're like feeling not passion. We have no passion left. We have no drive left. We're burnt out. That's definitely goes back to like giving yourself some space. It might even mean giving yourself some serious space, 3 months or, you know, whatever. And I know that's so hard. You know, Benny was burnt out and I just knew that for the best thing for the family was to give him some space to recoup. So, I mean, I know it's not perfect and I know we all have different levels of like support, but if you're really burnt out as well and trying to push yourself to find the next thing, that's really hard. So if you can find some support to maybe give you a little bit of space to not, you know, be burnt out so that it could come from there as well. I also love a good reading. You know, I'm always going to tell you that I love a good reading. Like I, you know, I think what Sean does with the human design, and it's so cool to see, like when she was telling me some things in my human designs, I'm like, that is so like insane that somehow my birthday, my birth time, like whatever was happening in the stars at the moment in my energy body, you know, that this is telling me, giving me a lot of clues, you know, that there's like a lot of clues there. It's telling me like how to work, all that stuff. So I think that that's also so important.
You make a great point about space, Nikki. And what I would say too, like even I did a session for a woman who was in like a toxic work environment. So big, if you're burnt out, your environment's really unhealthy, because sometimes we just don't have control over that. And I was like, your soul wants to like go on a trip. I was like, go volunteer somewhere. Go do like, I remember back when I was traveling and I had no money, I would do workaways or different things that were like, I get to take space, but I have my needs met. And this client wrote to me and was like, I'm going to Panama. And I was like, no way. And she's going to go and like volunteer for 3 months. So I think I totally agree. If you need space and you're burnt out, let yourself also get creative. You know, sometimes like, you can talk to your employer. Maybe you can go on leave. Like you never know, and get creative with the ways you can take that space, right? Like obviously in Benny's situation, like you were like, okay, I can step in, but you know, also see how all the different ways that you can be supported and make things happen. Cause sometimes people are scared to give themselves a break or they're not sure how. So that'd be something else I'd throw in there. Cause I was surprised. I like saw that in a session. I was like, oh, you're still needs to like get out of there like now. There's so many ways that you can do it in a way that's like not financially scary or intimidating.
Did you not live on like a coffee farm? Am I getting this right? In like Colombia?
I've done it. Wait, all, what? You guys. Yeah. I lived on a coffee farm and gave tours of the farm in English because the sound spoke Spanish. I at 1.2 really wanted to take Spanish classes. And so I like worked at a hostel for work trade so I could like afford my Spanish classes. So I've done like a lot of different like volunteer type things. And they're just great, you guys, because you get to, yeah, you get funny stories. But yeah, with my best friend, we lived on a coffee farm and gave tours of this coffee like factory in English. It was amazing. Yeah.
I love it. You probably like smelled like coffee for months after that. Like you probably could never get the coffee smell off of you.
Well, like I do love coffee, so it's true, but I loved it. And then I think I told you it was like on property with like a chapel that they had converted into a brewery. So the brewer would like come in every night with like these like jugs of beer and be like, we made extra. And my best friend and I were like, great. And we would just, so it was just coffee and beer and good times. And it was so funny though, because I lived in Colombia, as you know, for like a year and a half. And we'd go back to the farm and like see the staff and like it just became like our family. So it was funny.
Hilarious. So guys, I know we had all sorts of conversations, but I hope it sparked some interest in you and know that we are supporting you and loving on you. You are not crazy for trying to find something that work-wise that really fits your schedule, fits your energy, fits your system. Like you are not insane. And you know, it doesn't always happen overnight that you get the message, but we want to send you like some encouragement that keep searching. You know, don't be hard on yourself, but definitely, you know, if you feel like something is not completely right, your soul's trying to talk to you, you know, and if you need extra support, that's why I brought Shawn on, because I think she's such a great resource. She has sessions. She also has this really cool kind of self-discovery with your human design, helping you trying to find your purpose program as well. So I want to introduce you to that. I think you have a free workshop coming up as well.
Yes. So depending on when you're listening to this, so I do have a free webinar coming up in a week that's about finding your ideal career through your human design. And I'll have a recording of that too if you're listening to this later. So I'm going to be teaching that, just how you can like use your human design to even like start the inquiry process. Because that really was my relationship with human design when I found it, was when I was like, I don't know what I want to do for work. And it really has been, obviously I ended up doing it for work, but even when I first found it, that was years before I even knew that would be a possibility. And it really has always been my shining light, you know, has helped me guide myself through some confusing moments. So it's very powerful. And just to add to what you said, Nikki, I think what I love about like your story and my story is that the soul is like so smart. Sometimes the path seems weird. Like even when you like went into media, that felt right. And when you had all those jobs with writing, you're like, that felt right, until one day it didn't. And I think it's easy as the human to be like, what's with that? Why can't I just do this thing? But I just think what's really cool about the soul's path is like, think about how smart that was, that now you incorporate that so much into your work. And so that's something else too, like that I want to remind anybody listening, that like sometimes the soul's path, like it won't make sense, but it will later down the road. So don't be afraid to pivot. Or I think that that's such an important thing to remember, because the wisdom of the soul, I think, is really comforting. And so, yeah, even if it doesn't make sense now, it will. And just trust that if you're waking up to your journey, like to your soul and starting this journey, it can just seem a little bit confusing at times, but it'll all come together. Human design is a great resource. It will guide you the whole way.
I love that. All of links to Shawn's workshop and just to connect with her will be in the show notes in case anybody wants that connection and support. And we're just sending you so much love. Shawn, I love you so much. Thank you for coming and being on the show with me.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so
much. Bye, everyone.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. I love you guys so much. If you have a sec, I would so appreciate it if you would leave me a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Those reviews are so helpful. And if you're ready to start living your soul-led life, pick up my latest book, Soul-Led Living, available on Amazon. Until next time, love you much.